Okay, good afternoon, welcome. I'm so happy to see you. Anybody here never been with me before? Wow, good. I'm always happy when there are people who have never been with me before because it makes it much easier for me to begin so that I can tell you what I'm about. I don't have to think of something new to say. As if I've ever said anything new. I come here to speak about self-inquiry. I come here with the hope of communicating to you, all of you, the preciousness of self-inquiry, the power of it, the uniqueness of it. It's not like anything else. You see, it's not like any other spiritual endeavor that you've been involved in, self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is the last step, really. Everything else that we've been doing for all of our lives is postponement and, well, postponement of that last step. The self-inquiry I speak of is the self-inquiry that was taught by Ramana Maharshi, which is important to know that a lot of people talk about self-inquiry. A lot of people have been talking about self-inquiry for many thousands of years, actually. But for the most part, the self-inquiry that is spoken of in the spiritual realm has to do with clearing the clouds of confusion and ignorance and so forth so that we can see through to our true self. And the underlying justification of the need for self-inquiry has to do with the fact that we must fix our lives in order that we can see our true self. We must fix our minds. We must rid ourselves of this hot smoke cloud of confusion and ignorance, and it is that that prevents us from seeing our true self. Our true, shining, eternal, wondrous self. For Ramana, that didn't, well, it didn't compute. It didn't make sense. Ramana, you see, was not, didn't attain anything, but he didn't even get the appearance of attaining realization and understanding as an outcome of some spiritual practice, as we kind of expect would be the case. I mean, otherwise, why would we be spending all this time on spiritual practice? But Ramana didn't attain anything through a course of spiritual practice. Ramana was a 16-year-old boy when he stumbled upon reality. Really. You know, he told stories about it, and other people told stories about it, and continue to do so, but really the fact of the matter is that this 16-year-old boy stumbled upon reality in the midst of a great fear of death. And that's all been explained in spiritual terms and with spiritual understandings and so forth, but that's beside the point. Ramana was engaged in no spiritual practice. He was a 16-year-old boy, and he stumbled upon reality. So, for Ramana, it isn't the self-inquiry that Ramana speaks of has nothing whatsoever to do with doing anything at all about your mind. Has nothing whatsoever to do with doing anything at all about your life, either in order that you can clear the air so that you can see the truth, or you can clear the air so that your life can become realized and enlightened. the self-inquiry of Ramana is based on what is really an insight that underlies pretty much all of spiritual teachings and all of the spiritual utterances whatsoever, which is the insight that the cause of all of our suffering and all of our misery, all of our hatred, all of our aggression, all of our confusion and ignorance is a false belief about what we are, is in fact the false belief that we are our lives. Our lives being our history, our memories, our mind, our desires, our aversions, our understandings, our confusions, that whole universe that is me who wakes up in the morning and goes to sleep and carries this train of past action along with me. So Ramana, at the heart of it, sees very clearly that the problem has nothing whatsoever to do with what happens within our lives, like circumstance, good circumstance, bad circumstance, or quiet mind or a noisy mind, or good desires or bad desires, or any of that. Ramana saw very clearly it has nothing to do with any of that, and therefore nothing whatsoever has to be done about any of that. The problem is a false belief that we are that. Life, mind, body, history, so forth. And if that's the truth, which is surely the insight that runs through pretty much all spiritual teaching, if that's the truth, that the problem is a misunderstanding about what I am, then the solution must be the truth, not a fixing of what I falsely believe myself to be, but the truth of what I am. The solution to the false is the true. When the truth is seen and comprehended, when the truth is seen, when you see yourself directly, face to face, without any intervention or mediation to it, when you see yourself directly face to face, then the idea that you are your life must fall, because you see the truth. Now, that's the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. That's at the heart of everything that Ramana Maharshi ever said. And in my experience, and in the experience of many people who I have been with over time, in my experience, this self-inquiry, this seeking after the direct, unmediated experience of the reality of what I am, is, well, infallible. It can't fail. Once it's embarked upon, it can't fail. I mean, you know, surely this is all happening within the confused and stupefied human mind stream, and surely there will be misturnings and misunderstandings and a continuation of this commentary about whether I'm doing it right or doing it wrong, or what does it mean, or what will it produce, or how will I be changed, or all of that. But none of that, all of that is beside the point, because, well, because you are here. And it is absolutely easy to see yourself. There's not a moment in the entire history of your life when you have not been aware of yourself. Never. There's not a moment in the entire history of your life when this that you are has changed at all, when it has veered away from one thing or grasped onto another, when it has been darkened or hurt or tormented or enlivened or filled with bliss or any of that. You are here, always the same, never changing, never moving, never absent. So this business of self-inquiry is like, how can I say, a slam dunk.
Well, that's not a good one.
That's a bad one. It's very easy. The only thing that's hard about it, in my experience, and I, you know, I am the worst of all those who have come upon self-inquiry and have taken it up, really. I was a clown at self-inquiry. But in my experience, once it really captures you, the reality that you're here and you see yourself all the time, and that what you are really doesn't have much of anything to do with this life, you know, this life. Nothing can keep you from it. Nothing. There is no need to polish any mirrors. There is no need to rid yourself of any negative emotions or bad thoughts or good thoughts or bliss or hell or any of that. Nothing can stop you from this. And here's what happens. First of all, isn't it true? Is there anybody here who in any way has any confusion whatsoever about the fact that they are here? No. Can't be any confusion. That's the one thing, the only thing that you know. All the rest is, well, if this and if that, and I think it's this way and it might be that way, but about the fact of your presence, you are have absolutely no doubt, and you are absolutely sure. So the self-inquiry then is to look for that certainty of being, that certainty of presence that doesn't change. That's the same now as it was when you were three. And then do it again. And do it again. As often as it occurs to you to do so. Every time you stop to think, what should I do next? Do that. Look for yourself. Look and see if you're not here. Look and see if you changed any. In the midst of all of the stupidity that we engage in the midst of all of the grasping after this and holding that away, still, with all of that going on, with the most insane manifestation of all of that going on, still you are here. Unchanged, unmoving, the same, permanent. So the issue here isn't knowing what you are, because you already do know what you are. You always have. There's never been a time when you haven't. There have been times when you have been seduced into the idea that you are this other thing or some other thing there, or this great guy or this sinner or this saint or whatever. There have been times when you have been seduced into believing that, but under it all, you know what you are. You know you're here. You know you're the same. And the whole misery of your life is founded on the absolute conviction that I am at stake in this life. That if there are bad thoughts here, I am going to hell. If there are bad desires here, I am going to hell. If I am wrong about something, I am going to hell. If I'm right about something, I'm probably still going to hell because I know there's a lot of other stuff that I'm wrong about. These thoughts, these ideas, these desires, these aversions. Why do I have to have this? Why can't I have that? Why can't I be like this? Why can't I be good? Why can't I be pure? Why can't I be quiet? Why can't I rest? All of this movement, this energy of needing to fix, to correct the life that you enjoy, all of this is predicated on the belief that you're at stake in it. And the belief that you're at stake in it is an outcome of the belief that it is you. And it is not. So when the belief that it is you goes, so too does this idea that you are at stake in your life. When the belief that this life is you is gone, what remains is, well, you. Just you. And life reveals itself to be not at all what you thought it was. No different than it's ever been, but not at all what you thought it was. Life reveals itself to be sweet. Actually, the realization of infinite consciousness. That's what life is, just as it is. But you can't know that as long as you think you are the life. So Ramana tells us, find out who you are before anything else. You know, I mean, Ramana would get in these really highfalutin discussions about metaphysics and the history of Advaita teachings and all of that, and pranayama practices and mantras and all of that stuff. And then at some point, always, he would say, but of what use is all of this if you don't know who is the one who is subject to this? Of what use is all of this if you don't know what you are? Before seeking after understanding of the world and the life, first find out who is the one who needs that understanding. First find out what you are. And in the end, always find out what you are. Rest in the reality of what you are. You are reality. You are the only reality there is. There is no reality outside of you. There is no Buddha mind outside of you. There is no God outside of you. There's nothing outside of you. So the practice of self-inquiry is really, really simple. It is to, and you know, several times I've been asked, well, is there a technique? And, boy, I don't know. Yeah, sure there is. But you'll figure it out. Self-inquiry is just this. See if it's not true that what you want really is to know the truth. See if that's not true. If you can see that what you really want is to know what you are, then everything else will get taken care of. Really. If you can see that all of your life has been spent desperately trying to figure out who you are and failing, every thought, every movement, every action, every aversion, every desire, all of it fits into this lifelong effort to discover what you are. Every bit of it. In the life, it takes the form of trying to shape the life into a shape, a character, a manifestation that you can call yourself, that stays, that kind of doesn't always change and move away and shift. And all the life that's spent doing that by trying to see where I'm right and how I can do better at what I'm doing and how I can fix my mind, how I can be a good person, a nicer person, a more compassionate person, how I can rid myself of my negative tendencies, my tendency to overeat or to use drugs or to get drunk or to be lazy or whatever. All of these things are done in service to the need to find out what you are and to have that be something that's satisfactory and acceptable to you. Every bit of it. All of your attention and concern about what others think of you, likewise, serves only one purpose, and that is to make of yourself something that is acceptable, knowable, and not so bad, that you can live with. All of it. If you see that, if you can see that, it's all over. Because the moment you see that clearly, you also see clearly that what you've been doing doesn't work. It's just holding this up, holding that up, trying to keep track of this, trying to keep track of the other thing. It doesn't work. Still, you are this moving target If you can see that what you want in life is to know what you are, if you can see that, then all of the energy that's spent now on trying to shore up a picture of you, a version of you that's acceptable, can be sublimated and turned to the only chance you have of finding the truth, which is looking for the actuality of what you are. The core of it, the heart of it, the bone of it, the actuality of it. Not the things that come and go, but the thing that stays, the thing that remains when thoughts are gone, the thing that remains when thoughts are present. So, the practice of self-inquiry is just this. It is to take it as your conscious project to know once and for all, for yourself, without regard to what anyone else has ever said, to know once and for all, for yourself, what you are. Just that. And that takes care of all the rest of it. Every chance you get, stop and see. Am I here? How do I know that? What am I? What is it about me that's never changed? What's here always? Look for that. Obsess about self-inquiry. I mean, really obsess about it. Make it the main thing that you think about. Think about it. It's okay to think about self-inquiry. It's okay to obsess about self-inquiry. It's okay to concoct mantras and meditations and all whatever works for you to draw your attention inward toward the subject. In any experience, you are the subject. No matter what it is, you are the subject. Where is that? What does that feel like? What's it feel like to be the subject? What's it feel like to be the hearer of my voice? What does that feel like? Where is the hearer of my voice? What does it feel like? What am I? Really? Not the interpreter of my words, but the hearer of the noise, the sound. Look and see. Look and see. Find new ways to look for yourself, always. What am I? Where am I? Is there a center to me? Is there a heart to me? Is there a core to me? Where is that located? Where am I located? Am I located in the body? Can I find myself in the body? Am I in the mind? The brain? Where am I? What am I? Have I ever changed? Am I not the same as I was when I was 3? What does that feel like? What do I mean when I say that? I mean, I know it's true, but what do I mean? What am I looking at? Again and again throughout the day, think about it. What am I, really? Really, what am I? I know, and you must know, that you can't be anything that comes and goes in your consciousness, because you are that which sees the coming and going. So what am I, really? Where in the world am I to be found? What do I feel like? What? This is very confusing. Who's confused? What does confusion, what's it feel like to experience confusion? Everything, every breath, every thought, every action, every reaction turned on itself, turned inward on itself, looking for its source and its receiver, which is me. Duh. What am I? So that's the practice of self-inquiry. It is not like the spiritual practices that are laid out in a path and stages of the path and so forth. They have a different purpose to them, those practices. The purpose of self-inquiry is to cut through it all. The purpose of these other practices is to prepare you for self-inquiry. Really. And they are well-intended. But they end up being more postponement, more stages of the path. What was intended as preparing you for self-inquiry turns out to be just another room that you can go to sleep in. So this is unlike any of those practices. There are no stages of the path. There are no set, structured ways of doing this. There is just this constant thinking about this question, what am I, really? And the payoff of this is that over time, you see, it takes time. You cannot even see this belief that you are your life. That's like the lenses in your eyes. You can't see it. It takes time for it to be eaten up, eroded away by the light of the truth, really. But it is. And I tell you from my own experience that this belief that I am my life is gone long before you know it's gone. While you are still convinced that there's a problem, the belief is gone. And you can tell that because you will notice, if you pay attention, that your life, the circumstances may be the same as they always have been, or worse. But your life, well, it's not so hard, really. It's not such a big deal, really. And really, I mean, what a ride, right? Wow, it's quite delicious, this life. Oh yeah, it's got lots of issues and problems and stuff, but that's delicious too. I'm not hurt by it. I am not harmed by any of it, nor am I enhanced by any of it. You'll continue to have spiritual experiences that seem to be different from the spiritual experience that is your life. But so what? You're not helped by any of it. You're not harmed by any of it. You are the same as you have always been. And over the long run, as this inquiry continues, and it never ends, I mean, because really what the inquiry is being aware of awareness. What the inquiry is being aware of this reality, this present reality, which is always the case. And once you see that you're always aware of it, well, you're always aware of it. So the inquiry never stops. But the life that we see very clearly is not me. I spent all of this life persuaded that this life was me and therefore was a problem. It was going to die. It was going to be bad. It was going to get hurt. It was going to hurt others. It was going to be, God knows what it's going to be. It wasn't going to be rich enough. It was going to be too rich. This life that was such a burden and a problem, this life from which I stand at arm's length. And really, you see, you do stand at arm's length from your life, watching everything, being careful that nothing gets in under the radar. This life that I kept like this, turns out that in the absence of the belief that I am this life, I can settle into this life so intimately, so without any separation, so without any idea that there's a problem here that needs to be fixed, so wondrously settle into this life, almost as if it was me in the end, without a problem. And that's the outcome of self-inquiry. And that is the enlightenment that is spoken of. the enlightenment that is spoken of in the teachings is the shining of light on reality. That's all. It's enlightenment. It's not the acquisition of godlike powers of flight and stuff that we have led ourselves to believe. We've done this. Self-realization, the realization of truth, is so simple. It's like when you realize that it's Sunday and not Saturday, as you had thought. Oh. So, I used to talk about a lot of other things, I think. But in more recent times, I just talk about self-inquiry. You're welcome to talk about anything you want to, and I'll certainly talk to you about anything you want to and try to bring it back to self-inquiry, which is what I mostly have interest in. This business of self-inquiry, the main thing that interests me and engages me in this whole adventure of self-inquiry is how to communicate it. It's all about communication. And it is, because after all, it's only within this life that the desire to be free of this life appears, right? It's not in you that it appears. What do you care? See, I see things a little differently than most spiritual traditions do, I think. See, I don't see the mind as the problem. I don't see anything as the problem other than this belief. And I see that the human mind is, I really see that in my case, and I'm certain that I'm not alone. I can see that my mind for all of this life has been seeking, as I said, to find out what it was by means of getting rid of what it didn't want to be and holding on to what it did want to be and so forth and so on. So I can see that my mind really wants to know the truth of what I am. And I can see that, therefore, that it must be true for other people as well. So that when I speak to other people about self-inquiry, I have to try to find some way to speak to this mind that already is engaged in self-inquiry but doesn't know it, and somehow make that little adjustment that says, look here, look here. And the way to universally make that communication so far escapes me, eludes me. The only way I know to communicate about this is to converse together. And as I speak to more people over the years, I dare say that I get a little better at it because I'm speaking to you and we're all the same. It doesn't matter whether it's you that I have a conversation with or anybody. So we're all the same. So, that's it. That's my whole bag of tricks, and I am very happy and pleased to be here, and I will be happy and pleased to speak with any of you about any of this. Yes, although I will bring it back to self-inquiry if should it wander away.
Okay. I'm not sure how to hold this. Okay,
you got to tell me your name one more time.
Oh, Larry.
Larry, right, okay.
Lazy Larry.
I am bad with it.
Okay. When I say to myself, what am I? Or who am I? But I like to say, what am I? Because I don't know if I'm another person. It's more like, what is right, better, right?
Well, what is different? I tell you, the inquiry that starts with who am I has a different target than what am I. Ramana actually provided us with two roads of self-inquiry. One is, who am I? Which he mostly used, and I think he mostly used it because, I don't know why. And the other is, what am I?
I think what am I is more like open-ended.
One is to uncover the truth about what you think you are. That's who am I. At any moment, there is a center of kind of me-ness, right? That is me. And there is one who seems to be the one that's affected and cares and is contracted and so forth. Ramana, who am I? In who am I? The target is that one, to see what it is. This is the one you believe yourself to be. And in all cases, when this is, of course, the dreaded ego, the devil itself. And in all cases, of course, when ego is investigated, when the presence of this thought and this personality is investigated, it disappears. It reveals itself to be inexistent. What am I is seeking to see directly the actuality of what I am. Not to see through the who.
Well, I like what better, you know, for me. But when I ask it, what am I, is there anything, is my brain supposed to do anything? Or do I say, what am I, and just leave it at that? And then something will answer me eventually, or something will give me an experience of what I am.
Well,
or do I actually think,
that may
what
be,
am I, and try to think about it?
That could be, well, think about it. I advise you to think about
think
it.
Think about
but,
it, okay.
But, yeah, really, you know, you can't go wrong thinking about reality.
Like, what am I, and then just try to think about it, even though I don't know, like, try to think about it.
Right, think about it. What does that mean? How can I find out? Where do I look? What is it that, but you see, the thing is that all of this would be relevant if, in fact, you were not aware of what you are. But what I claim, and what actually pretty much everybody, all the great ones from the, not that I am one of them, but all the great ones from the beginning have claimed, and I find this to be true, is that you already are aware of yourself. That really there's nothing that needs to be done to make you aware of what you are. The whole business of seeking to have the direct experience of what you are serves only the unraveling of the belief that you are something else. But, so, therefore, you're here, right?
You mean I already know what I am?
Yeah, you already know what you are.
Why do I have to even do this then? What do I have to say?
Well,
what am
because
I?
Because somehow or other you don't have to, really. There's no need for you to do so. The only reason for you to do so is if you think you're miserable in your life. If you think you're miserable in your life, that's the reason to do so.
I do think I'm miserable
in
my life.
Well, that's the reason. But you know, I read somewhere recently. You know, they're always coming up with these. Clever little ways to try to catch our attention and to try to bring into our consciousness a sense of what in the world we're talking about when we try to get you to see what you already see, right?
Right. And you already know what you
one thing that I read is a little trick for that is to, can you see that, what's the taste of your own mouth?
It is what it is.
Yeah, and, but you can see, you know the taste of your own mouth. But you know the taste of your own mouth so thoroughly, because it's always here, that you never notice it. Your mouth is what you use for tasting other things. But the taste of your own mouth you never notice, because it's here always. You're always tasting your own mouth. It's the same with the reality of what you are. You are never unaware of this. Are you the same as you've always been? Tell the truth.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm speaking of when I say you're the same now as you were when you were three?
Yeah, yeah.
You see, there's that
same thing.
Yes, right. There's that same indescribable reality in the background of everything that you know is you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't change.
My you-ness.
Yes, and it doesn't change. It's not affected by the misery in your life.
That's true.
That's right. Well, that's what, that is what you are. and you're always aware of it.
So I just have to become that and stop becoming being this.
You can't become that because you have never not been that. What you have to do is bring this background taste into the foreground whenever you can, just as we just did.
Okay.
Right? That's what we did here.
Right.
We brought this ever-present taste into the foreground for just a second. And that's what you have to do. That's the whole purpose of the inquiry, what am I, is to bring that background that's always here into the foreground as often as possible. And that, over time, eats away this belief that your life of misery. Your life continues, you know, it might get better, it might get worse, whatever. I mean, eventually it'll get fundamentally worse.
Yeah, right.
Right? But your life will continue. But when you are aware of the fact that this reality that you are is untouched and unaffected at all by anything that transpires in your life, then that belief that you are your life doesn't have a leg to stand on. And it's gone. Then you can enjoy this. Really. Then you can see that these lives, they're called forth out of silent awareness just to be seen. These lives are called forth. They are sucked out of empty awareness because they have to be seen, because awareness has to see itself. Then you see that these lives, just as they are the realization of eternal awareness. That's what they are.
You mean that's what I am, awareness?
You are awareness. You are awareness. It is you. It is this background of awareness that calls into being this life so that it can see itself and see you. But the believing that will do you no good.
Right.
Right? That's just another thing to believe.
Just to believe.
Right. Right. What helps is to do what we just did here as often as you can.
Get in touch with it.
Just get in touch with it. Yeah, that's it. Just that. Just get in touch with the reality, the background, the unchanging presence of you as often as you can. And then all this will, you'll see all of this. Okay?
Okay.
Is that helpful? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I know what to do now a little more. Because I was asking,
that's good.
What am I, or what is I? What am I? But I wasn't thinking. I was thinking, well, maybe you're not supposed to think.
No, think about it. You know, figure it out, really.
Okay.
Figure out how to do it. But now what we experienced here is the target. That is exactly what you're after. So what you're doing is thinking about how to bring that into the foreground as often as you can.
Okay.
You follow me?
I think I know what it is. A little better.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Greg. Glad to see you.
Good to see you, too.
How you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
Tickled pink.
Excellent. So I guess I feel like I always want to start off by saying thank you for your offering. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And I guess I kind of wanted to do a little experiment, if that's okay.
Okay.
You know, I'm always like afraid to look out into the faces here. And, you know, it's interesting, like you, I wanted to do that. How you're just talking with Larry about bringing the background to the foreground. It seems like that gets lost in like a fearful or charged like situation for me. That doesn't happen consciously. That maybe you're saying that...
In a spiritually charged situation, it doesn't happen.
A human charged situation, a fearful situation.
Okay. Yeah, right.
I'm afraid of...
Right, it doesn't seem to. And the reason it doesn't is because the human mind stream is fixated on the certainty that it is the life.
Right, especially in a fearful situation.
Right.
So do you
fearful
think it's
situation, right?
Fearful. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
can I do that real quick?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you frighten yourself. I don't know, these guys here aren't very scary, though.
Not so bad, actually.
No, it's not.
I think I was more afraid of the idea of it. But it's like, or it's like the beginning, or just like facing it, the first, just getting over it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and the truth is it doesn't matter whether you get over it or not. I mean, it's easy to get over fear because fear is so weak. The reason fear is so inflated, right? The reason it's so big and it screams and it hollers is because there ain't nothing to it. Really, there ain't nothing to it. It's like, look at fear. Huh?
It's the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, it's the Wizard of Oz, right. You look behind the curtain and, That's the reason fear is so noisy. Is because really,
but isn't it? But that's kind of maybe it's a practice. But isn't it good to look behind the curtain? I guess I
can't hurt, but it can't help either.
I know.
That's, I mean, it really can't. You know, that what helps is seeing what you are. The rest of it is okay. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I say to everybody, keep up with your practices. And you know, like a practice is looking at fear, right? And that's a practice that tends to clear some misunderstanding about fear and maybe make you feel a little more stable and so forth. And, you know, and that's good. Keep up your practices. This is the other radical difference about self-inquiry. And it is that self-inquiry doesn't say to you, okay, give up all your other gods. I'm the big god now. Okay, give up your meditation, give up your yoga, give up your seeking after material wealth, give up your seeking after sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You got to come to me now. Self-inquiry isn't like that. Self-inquiry says, just keep doing what you're doing, but look at yourself as you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah, right. But it's almost like... sometimes changing some of those things helps me to look at
myself.
That's
good. Then do it.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Do it, by all means. The truth is, right, in my experience, and like I said, I was really bad at it. But the truth is, in my experience, I did a lot of things to try to make it easier for me, and some of them worked and some of them didn't work. And so far as I can tell, none of them made the slightest bit of difference because they were all just story about what I was doing and why I was doing it, and the resulting, you know, moments of peace or clarity or so forth, that was story too. It was just story. The experience of clarity is part of the story of Greg. On this moment, I was clear and everything was quiet and calm. And then other stuff came rushing in. So that what I'm saying is that all of that has to do with continuing the focus on the state of your life, on the state of your mind. And it's okay. It can't hurt you. Really, it can't hurt you. It just can't help you either. You know, nothing can touch you, for good or bad. Nothing. So, by all means, and believe me, I did a lot of things. I did a lot of things. Which I won't bore you with, but by all means, you know, if fear or some fearfulness or, you know, some complex of fearfulness is troubling you, and you can see a way through to ridding yourself of it, do so. But look for yourself. Look at yourself while you're doing that, and see if this is the thing. Okay, fearfulness, this complex of fearfulness interferes with my self-inquiry. Okay, well, I know that if I look at directly at fear, that it'll dissolve. And then as the fear dissolves, because I have experience with that, it always does, always. So that as the fear dissolves, then there'll be a time of relative peace and clarity, and then I can and I will look, you know, for myself, right? But even while all that is going on, right, when fearfulness was present, raging, when the practice intervened to resolve the fearfulness, when the fearfulness was resolved and clarity prevailed, through that whole procedure, you were unchanged. You were here. Mm-hmm. You
but
see?
Yes, but it's not conscious of unmediated experience.
That's right. And the
it's
reason,
reactive. It's
and the reason
false.
I call this to your attention is so that in the midst of doing these practices, and I'm not trying to put something on you, right, that you do this or that, but in the midst of doing whatever you're doing, just from time to time, check and see. Now I got clarity. Am I different than I was then? Because that's a way to bring this unmediated direct experience of reality into consciousness. It's a way of checking. It's a way of looking. It's a method, a technique. Let me see. Have I changed now that I'm clear? Now that I'm calm? Am I different? Did this help me? Really? You see?
Yeah.
It's a way to bring you back to what's real, which is all this is about. So that in every case, as you've gone through your life, you know, really, as you've gone through your life, whenever it occurs to you to do so, like you're in the midst of a traffic jam and irritated, I get that a lot. And then the traffic jam clears and everything kind of settles down and got smooth sailing again. Look and see. Wasn't I just the same during that traffic jam as I am now? Am I any different now? Anything. Look to see. Have I changed? Am I the same? Because if you look to see if you've changed, you've got to be looking for you. You follow me? Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Okay.
It helps.
Okay, that's mm-hmm. what I like to hear. I'm easy to please. Just let me be helpful. Yeah. Hi.
Hello.
Do I know your
Jacob.
Name? Jacob?
Jacob, yeah.
We met
up in Berkeley.
My God. And here you are down here.
Yeah.
And here I am down here.
That's what my question is.
Uh-huh.
It almost seems paradoxical to ask questions in this
uh-huh.
topic.
Well, it is, but it doesn't matter.
Something that keeps coming up with me is in trying to remember who you are and see that you're always here and conscious. But how did I get here? You know, like I'm in, where am I? Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I had to make certain decisions, you know, when to go, how to go, what route to take. And all the time I was there, but it seems to me that one of the problems that I have in all the complexity of my life is that I lose that I am here all the time because I'm following my mind and heart or whatever body and getting all caught up in past experiences, what happened before, and I'm using my memory of those experiences to make my other decisions, and okay, I'm always there.
Here's the only correction that I would make to all of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, like that's the way it seems, right? But it's not you that's doing that. It's not you that traveled from Berkeley to Santa Monica, as it's not me that traveled from Ojai to Berkeley. That traveling all occurred within me, which is you. The decision-making, that all just came spontaneously. You know, when you start examining this business about what goes into making the life make the turns it makes and so forth, it should pretty quickly become apparent to you that the things that you think of as you making decisions really aren't doing anything at all. They're just thoughts. And there is an experience that arises in circumstances in which this road or that road has to be taken that feels like something that we have determined that what that is my deciding it. But that's not what it is. Really, it's not. It's not. None of it is what we think it is.
Well,
So the idea that what's going on in your life, right, is something that has to be figured out or understood or resolved or gets in the way or whatever, is predicated on the belief that you are your life. And I tell you it's not true. And I tell you that the only way to rid yourself of that belief, which is the cause of all the misery, is to look at yourself as often as you can. Just that. You know, not like medicine. Mm-hmm. Not like a spiritual practice, but like taking an antibiotic. Look at yourself as often as you can. Whether that's once a day or, you know, 100 times a day, it doesn't matter. To just look at this reality, and you know what you are. You know that. You're here. Mm-hmm. You know what doesn't change. So you look at that as often as you can, and over time, this attachment to the travails and the
decisions
and I don't want to do it right or wrong, I want to do it right, all that will just fade. The decisions will, as they have always done, be made anyway. You will do whatever you do, whether you care about what you do or don't care about what you do, you'll keep doing things.
Well, that's kind of where the question came from, is that it seems like thinking that you are in charge of making those decisions, or it, just in a moment-to-moment decision-making, choice-making, takes away from the inquiry.
This is really good, because really, it's not so much that it takes away from the inquiry, it is the disease that the inquiry seeks to cure. Mm-hmm. Right? And the idea that something has to be done about this in order that the inquiry can proceed is just an excuse for postponement. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it is this idea that I am running things is the disease that the inquiry seeks to cure. So don't worry about it. Even when there is this, you know, feeling that I'm at stake here and I got to make these decisions and how did I do that? Oh my God, how did I get here anyway? Even when that's present, check and see, am I still here? Have I changed? Because it is really like medicine, I swear to you. It's not like something that's going to clear up all your understanding of things, you know, and resolve all the issues, the metaphysical conflicts and so forth, right? Existential conflicts. It's not like that. There are no existential conflicts. That's all among the things that we think we know what they are, but we don't know what anything is. So it is natural to believe that the outcome of the practice would be a clarification within the life where everything becomes clear. But that's not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to get rid of this disease that is the belief that I am the life. And the amazing thing about it is that we think we're running things as if the fact that we think we're running things is means that we think we're bigger than we really are. But really, the fact that we think we're running things is thinking that we're much littler than we really are. Is believing ourselves to be these lives. And it's not true.
Well, then the question comes up, if that's the disease, and it's not so, then who's running things?
Why, you are. Who else? Can you find anybody anywhere but you? But just not in the way you think.
Well, that's kind of what I was trying to get at.
You know, if you I wish I need to. You know, I need to sit down and think up metaphors for things. You know, or similes. if there's a pond that's absolutely clear and still and nothing's moving, right? And you go to the edge of the pond and stick your hands in it, start, you know, agitating it and so forth. It's going to be a lot of waves and a lot of splashing and a lot of all of that stuff. And you're the cause of that. You caused that. You're the one that did that. No question about it. But would you say that you're responsible for all of the little molecular interactions that make up, that make this particular splash the shape that it is? Or do you keep in there, like, and make sure that the water molecules collide with each other in just the way they're supposed to, and the temperature stays the same as it does in order that this splash has exactly the shape that it does?
Well, then that, well, it's a metaphor, but that's, there are just physical laws that take care of that.
Right, exactly. There are physical laws that take care of that. There are, well, I don't know, metaphysical laws that take care of the way your life unfolds. You are the force that calls your life out of empty awareness. You are the force that does that. Mm-hmm. You have nothing whatsoever to do with the micromanagement of the way all that looks. Boy, I'm getting...
That's dicey.
I mean, I'm getting a little bit... This metaphor is getting stretched a little bit. But really, the usefulness of this kind of conversation is to dissuade you from the idea that there's anything for you to do. Not so much to dissuade you from the idea that there's anything for you to do, but to persuade you of the idea that the most effective thing you can do is look at yourself. You know, you don't need to stop worrying about those things. You just have to look at yourself. And it'll fix it. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you came to Santa Monica. However you managed to get in. Yes, Dana? Dana?
John, I just wanted to share an insight. This isn't worth coming up there for. It might help.
Says who?
I say it.
You can't get away with that. Carl may get mad at me.
This is just a little insight which I picked up from Suzanne Siegel, who's no longer in the body, but was an enlightened woman. And the reason I think it struck me was not only have I flashed on her saying this in similar moments, but also dissimilar moments, where, you know, where a little lesson becomes bigger than it sounds. And one of the things that she said was that one time she was traveling from one place to another, just as Jacob was describing, and it suddenly occurred to her that she was traveling through herself to get to somewhere that she already was. And that, after I thought about it, just blew me away, because that's the essence.
No, it's not. No, it's not. That's a, and you know, I mean, really, I'm not trying to be disrespectful,
no,
but it's not the essence of it. That's a description of an effect. It's a description of an effect that arises, you know, an insight that will arise. Insights arise all the time. Of course, these insights, you have to see, are predicated on some sense that what the insight is about is something. But these insights come all the time, and they're very beautiful. But they're not the essence of the thing. Getting the insight will not free anyone from the conviction that they are their life. Because this is actually our common experience, you know. I mean, when we're driving somewhere, our common experience is that we're driving through ourselves to coming from nowhere and going to where we started from anyway. That is our common experience. It's just that we don't pay attention to that common experience. We pay attention instead to all the other stuff. So bringing that insight, although it's beautiful, into consciousness, it will give us some pleasure, but it won't rid us of this belief that we are our life. The only thing that will do that is the repeated, cumulative experience of looking at myself directly, face to face.
I understand what you're saying, but I guess the reason that reached me was maybe I had never thought about that mm-hmm. particular idea of traveling through myself to get to somewhere that I already was in. What it seemed to reinforce was what I hope I understand correctly, you're talking about that we are the space in which everything arises. So, you know, when I'm driving from here to Vaughan's, I don't usually think about traveling through myself to get to somewhere I already was. However, when I think about that in depth, it gets bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And it means that I am simply the space. And that's what I got out of it.
Okay. I mean, if it brings you to the experience of that, you know, the description of it is, you know, but if it brings you to the experience of that, then it's useful. But it is the experience of that that is the key.
Right.
That's the essence.
That's what I meant. Right. I didn't say it right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'm happy you came up, talked to me like
too.
This.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The only reason I'm so, you know, sometimes I think, boy, man, why don't you lighten up? You know, I mean, really, give these people a break. Self-inquiry. But the reason I am that way is because of my own experience. And because of my own experience of how easily I was able to spend quite a long time lost in spiritual experience, lost in bliss and oceanic consciousness and peacefulness and all of that. And so it's my own experience that causes me to see that these things are beautiful and useful and all of that, but what counts is you. That's what counts, is to look at you. That's the medicine. And I'm going to, maybe I'll just finish up by running the medicine metaphor again, because I think it's a good one, and I really think that it's important to hear. You know, the other thing about spiritual insights like that, Dana, is that they are so sweet. And we are so... so happy to fall for what feels good. You know, it's like what we do, right? And I say that from my own experience. So the medicine metaphor is a little bit, takes us a little bit out of the kind of spiritual sweetness and stuff. We suffer from a disease. We really do. We all suffer from a disease. And that disease is a false belief about what we are. And it is very much similar to a disease in the body, like an infection in the body where you're sick and feverish and have chills and fever and all of that. Truth is that no matter how sophisticated and well-educated you might be, you really don't know much about what's going on within the body that causes this bad feeling. You just know you're sick, you're feverish. You might have medical experience and knowledge that teaches you that this causes it and so forth, but you really, that's not really the same. You don't really get it. You don't really understand it. All you know is that you're miserable. And you go to the doctor, and the doctor gives you antibiotics, a course of antibiotics. And he says, take these antibiotics 3 times a day for as long as the medicine lasts, and everything will come out right. And because we are 21st century people, and we have such a vast and comprehensive understanding of these matters and so forth, we say, oh yeah, I understand, I'll take them and I'll be all right. But really, we don't know what that stuff does. We don't know what's going on. We take the pill, we take again, we take it again, we take it again. And finally, after several days of doing this, we begin to feel a little better and a little better and a little better. But we don't know what is happening within the body that causes this antibiotic is doing in order to kill off the disease entities that it's killing off in order to make us feel better. We're not aware of all that. We just take the medicine and we get better. It's the same with self-inquiry. If we look at ourselves at the absolute stark reality of what it feels like to be. If we do that every chance we get, as often as we can, just to get the flash, the momentary flash of this permanence, this sameness that is always here, that's the medicine. That flash, that momentary comprehension of what I am, that's the medicine. And if we do that as often as we can, and if we keep doing that, we will notice over time that, well, I don't feel quite as bad as I used to. Actually, things are going pretty good. Yeah, I lost my job. my car fell off the road. But, you know, really, I feel okay. I'm not too bad. I'm feeling better. So take the medicine. The other thing about self-inquiry that is that it doesn't have like a, you know, like a place where you sign up to be part of a group of self-inquirers. You know, you're on your own. You really are. I give my life to the hope of being of some help that to anybody who really wants to be finished with suffering. I give my life to that, but really, what the best I can tell you is that in the end, you're on your own. Nobody can tell you this. Nobody can give you what you are. Nobody can take away from you what you are. Nobody. Nobody can help you with this, really, except with the encouragement and the willingness that I have to kind of say, well, wait a minute, not there. What about this? But nobody can help you find out what it is to be you. Nobody. I tell you the truth. You take the medicine and everything will turn out right. That's what Ramana used to say. Everything will turn out right. And that's the truth. I swear to God. So look at yourself. Whenever you can. It's really easy. There's never a time when you are unaware of yourself. Just look at yourself whenever you can. Just for a second. You know, really, just for a second. Because you see, we're all in this together. You are absolutely alone, and we are all in this together. And it really is true that the truth will set you free. That's the truth. It's not spiritually correctly placed, but it's the truth. Thank you so much for the satsang. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for your attention and your time and your willingness. May all being know itself. Om Shanti.